Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Roost Podcast. As always, I am Carter Spires, here with my co-host Matthew Bartlett, the founder and managing editor of the Roost, your premier source for Rice sports news and analysis. Thanks to everybody for following along as we enter the second phase of our extended off-season interview series. We're going to, as has now become custom, we're going to have a little bit of news to discuss and some announcements before we welcome our guest for the week. And I guess we start with what seems to become a recurring segment with the what is the latest COVID/college football related news?
It's tricky now, right? Because so, you know, spoiler alert, since this isn't, you know, breaking news at the moment, at least we record this usually midweek for a typical Saturday release. So when we record this, it might be a couple days before you hear it. And by then, who knows what else could have gotten shut down or postponed or paused. It feels like it is moving that quickly sometimes.
But yeah, we do, shortly after we recorded the last episode, I think, we had the first official cancellation of a college football game due to COVID-related concerns. It is not an FBS game. We have yet to have a game involving an FBS team be canceled, but this was Jackson State and Tennessee State. Yeah,
that's right. The Southern Heritage Classic played at the Liberty Bowl. So, and that one I think was notable because when you think FCS, you might not think, you know, super large SEC, Big Ten style crowds, but some of those games, those HBCU games in particular, like it's a get together, bring the whole family mm-hmm. festival kind of event. And so I read they were expecting, you know, somewhere in the, you know, 20, 30, 40,000 people in the city of Memphis that weekend for that game. And, you know, once you bring in family and friends and bands and everything else that comes with it, that becomes a little bit larger than the I forget what gatherings are allowed right now. 10 20 it's bigger than 10.
Yeah. So. And you know, we'll see where this goes. It's definitely a different situation because the financial incentives are so different, you know, at different levels of football. And obviously, you know, even at the FBS level, you really depend on the ticket revenue, the concessions, those sorts of things. But there's not the same at lower levels. Even the best teams, even the most popular teams, don't have anywhere near the same TV money of even the FBS conferences that get the least from that, like say Conference USA, for instance. Like, you know, our media rights deal is chump change compared to, you know, the Big Ten or the SEC, but it's still a substantial amount more than anybody at the FCS level is getting. So there's not the same incentive structure to make those games happen anyway at lower levels, but you know, we'll see if this is the first of some dominoes to fall, I guess.
Well, and you forget to some degree, and I think the TV portion is a big one because fans in the stands or not. And I was actually reading on the UConn move from the AAC. People were talking about, you know, is UConn football going to go drop down to FCS? And basically they said that's not in the cards. And part of the reason was because all of those TV contracts, getting games on TV, you know, whether that's conference affiliation or independent, there's a lot more bang for your buck and people willing to pay to get a FBS team on TV than to get an FCS team on TV. And so if, as you know, big money drives the bus, college football is that big money. And if FBS games can be played, they will be played. We just vary on from day to day and hour of how feasible the can is, right?
Yeah. And I mean, you know, 3 months ago, we were all wondering if it was going to be a thing. And then about a month ago, it seemed like things were on the uptick. And now you're looking at record-breaking case numbers in several states at this point. So who knows where we'll be in a month? Who knows where we'll be in 2 months? So I guess, yeah, fingers crossed that we start to trend back in the opposite direction.
Yeah. So we had that one cancellation that came out, I guess was about a week ago at the time. We also saw Florida A&M and Southern University. They canceled their week two game. And Southern is actually, the report was looking to cancel their week one game as well. I know some of the lower level conferences have talked about delayed seasons and things like that. I don't know if the virus situation is going to be better at the end of September than it's going to be at the end of August. But, you know, that falls into the bucket of blanket statement of nobody knows.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. And with baseball, you know, tentatively, reportedly, rumoredly to be coming back on the professional level, I've seen people be talking about, you know, whether or not a 60 game MLB season is legitimate. And, you know, as we talk about the repercussions of pro sports that are going to be coming back, I guess, end of July, and college sports, you know, hopefully following soon after. It's we don't really know what it's going to look like, but I can pretty much guarantee if Rice can play, they would like to win as many games as possible in whatever state that fits. I'm okay getting to a bowl berth on a technicality. Like, yep. I feel like, yep, this team should,
no
be,
reservations
should be
there
not to. But if like we decide that, you know, we just have to cancel like November and everybody gets a win for it, and then we'll play bowl games again in February, like, that works.
I'll take it.
I haven't heard that as a legitimate option, by the way, but you know, maybe we'll get there. Well, I think that's our COVID portion of the podcast, and we're going to go ahead and I feel like we need a little ditty for our breaking out that section.
Yeah, right.
A new staple. You know, maybe next week we'll keep going. So we got another section of our team interview previews coming so far. But before we get into that, I want to do a little bit of housekeeping and things that we want to hit before that interview. So first off, as always, I usually mention this at the top, but please rate, review, subscribe the podcast. Go ahead and leave us a little note if you'd like. Tell us what you like, what you don't like. I think we're doing pretty good. Last time I saw, we were somewhere around like 4.7, 4.8 stars or something, which,
not bad.
It feels pretty good. I don't know what the end all be all of that, but I know as y'all keep rating, it keeps boosting us higher and people keep discovering The Roost. And the more of that, the better for everyone's sake and helping us get good content out there. And one of those things that's helping us is the Patreon launch that we announced. I guess the podcast just posted with the stuff coming up past week, but wanted to thank y'all who have subscribed so far. That's going to enable us to do a lot of cool things on the site, and we're really excited about that. We should have some recruiting news and a couple things coming up around the bend for that, that only the folks that subscribe on that platform are going to get. So please go ahead and do that. Patreon.com/@theroost or @theroost.com/join. Either of those will get you to where you need to be. And those are the last couple things. And then Conference USA fans and Rice fans, both of the previews are going to be coming out on July 7th. I don't know if I said two things in the last podcast or not. Too many numbers running around in my, and I've track of time, which I think, you know, we need the bingo card for podcast repetitions. But that time is fixed. So July 7th, the Rice season preview going to be out, and July 7th, the Conference USA preview is going to be out. So if you are a Conference USA fan or a Southern Miss fan listening to this, then please go ahead and remember to go back and pick that up. And I will say, as we transition to Conference USA, we've gotten a really positive reception so far on this series. Had a lot of UAB fans from a couple weeks ago saying they enjoyed the show, and a lot of good things from the UTEP contingent. So I don't know if we're power ranking our fan base reactions so far, but UTEP might be in the lead. And that is a sentence that was said in real life. So we'll see. Southern Miss fans, when you hear that, go ahead and give us a listen, and, you know, be louder than UTEP, maybe.
All right, we are here now with our guest for the week, who is Jamie Arrington of the To the Top Talk podcast, who covering Southern Miss. Jamie, how are you?
Doing great. Doing great. Just took my mask off for a little R&R here with the my favorite friends from Rice.
I like that. We're going to start collecting all the positive things that people have been said. That'll be our promo.
There you go. There you go. Cut an intro. You know, the intro to our podcast is I took some sound bites.
Yeah, it's very good.
Well, we had our athletic director at the time was on the show, and I don't know what possessed him to say it, but he was like, Bill McGillis, this was 2016 maybe. And he said, you know, To the Top Talk, I have that with myself every night. And I was like, oh, so we saved it. And that's like in our intro.
I don't even know what that means.
To the top is our like that's like our saying. That's like But yeah, I don't know what that means either. And I didn't delve into anything deeper, but
now it's in podcast lore forever.
It's in podcast. Not going out. It's gonna be in there for a long time. So
that's fantastic. Well, you know, I guess this is going into going into football season number three for the Roost. This is going to be our second year with the podcast. And we've been having a lot of fun bringing in various Conference USA folks so far and kind of getting their take on where everybody's at. And we've had some varied answers so far, but it just kind of, you know, sum up, you know, what the feel and the sentiment around Hattiesburg is on the football team at the moment. You know, your 60-second, you know, elevator speech, is it are we feeling good about the team? Are we feeling bad? Is this COVID-19 making you feel worse or just stressing you out? Like, what's Southern Miss going to be like assuming we have a season in 2020?
I feel good about the team. I think there's a little bit of cautious optimism. I mean, Southern Miss fans are always cocky when it comes to football. I mean, regardless of how good or bad we are, they're just always cocky. But I think that there is kind of I think it's going to be really interesting because I kind of feel like Jay Hobson's back is against the wall. You have a head coach that has been here now. This will be his fifth season. You know, we expect to go to bowls every year. We expect to play for conference championships. And, you know, not delving into the history of Southern Miss, but 2012 was the rock bottom for Southern Miss athletics. And it took a while for the football team to get back, but we haven't played for a conference championship since 2011. And you have Jay Hobson here who's steadily put a team together. And last year you felt really good about who all was coming back. But this year it's kind of like it kind of delved off towards the end of the year. We lost our final three games, lost our bowl game. It felt like the enthusiasm wasn't necessarily there on the sidelines. It felt like there was an energy that was missing at times. And coach is a pretty even keel guy, but I kind of feel like the patience has run out and this is kind of I'm not going to say he has to win the conference title, but he definitely has to compete for it and definitely has to show some improvement to make it to 2021.
And I think this is really an interesting dynamic in Conference USA because I feel like, you know, it's not hot seat because, you know, like you said, Hobson's been pretty successful in the win column, at least at Southern Miss. But whether or not you talk it like Doc Holliday at Marshall, who else do we got there? Like Skip Holtz at Louisiana Tech, just a handful of coaches around Conference USA and programs that seem to like have reached the tread water stage, but just haven't been able to, you know, maybe that has been, you know, like the run from UAB and FAU. Like there's been some really, really good teams that have kind of stolen their moment at the top, but like Southern Miss has probably been one of those like tier two teams for under Hobson's tenure. Like they've always been like really, really good. They just haven't, they've been a game away.
It'd been a game away or two, or, you know, a running game away or a, there's been a lot go on. And I think the big thing with Hobson is Hobson is a great defensive mind. He was a defensive coordinator here at Southern Miss for, I believe he was here for about 6 years, you know, in the past in different tenures, but he is a very, very brilliant defensive mind. I had a local high school coach tell me before he was hired here that he said, I've gone to all these conferences. There's not a coach out there that can break down a defense and explain it to you in a way that you can understand like Jay Hobson can. But when it comes to offense here, that's been really where we've ultimately struggled, even though we've had some explosive teams during his tenure with his first year here with Nick Mullins and Ito Smith. Jack Abraham has, you know, lit up the yardage. But we haven't been able to put that total package together yet on offense during his time here. The first couple of years we had a offensive coordinator named Shannon Dawson, who was the type of guy on 3rd and 17 to run a quarterback draw with a quarterback that can't run. That was just like his MO. Last year, we had a new offensive coordinator. The first game, our running back goes down to an injury, out for pretty much the season, and never could get the running game going. I think the offensive line was great from as far as pass protection, but the run blocking wasn't good. And also last season, we had a brand new strength coach. And some people will say, well, you know, that's the strength coach, but it really, really made a difference. Case in point, our offensive line. This time last year, I think we had one offensive lineman that could squat 400 pounds. And as of the spring, we had 8. And that's something that they put a lot more emphasis on. So I kind of feel like this year we have a brand new offensive coordinator. He came from ULM, had some really solid offenses there. I think he's going to be a better fit here, not only from a coaching wise, but personality wise. The other guys we had were just not the most personable. It was laughable sometimes at some of these press events how Shannon Dawson in particular would perform. Just a cocky, just a smarmy guy, and he never could quite get that offense over the top. And you have guys that are in the NFL like Ito Smith and Nick Mullins now, and you can't get that going all the way, then that's, you know, maybe it's time to move on.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned about Hobson being a defensive coach and never being able to kind of get over the hump on offense. It seems to almost kind of be a trend in college football these days that, and maybe that's why you've seen such a trend of, you know, schools really prioritizing these guys who come from the offensive side to be the head coaches. Because it seems like there's a real trend of defense first coaches, you know, guys who came up as defensive coordinators who that's where they really have their schematic hand on the field. And it seems like there are a lot of those guys that for whatever reason, no matter how much they sort of change up coordinators, you know, no matter how much they, you know, say they're going to open the offense up or turn the play calling over or what have you. It seems like there are a lot of those guys that just always seem to have kind of a restrictor plate on the offense. Like, I mean, the one that always comes to mind for me is Will Muschamp. Like,
absolutely.
You know, who has now been a head coach in the SEC for what?
It feels like a decade. I guess it's probably like 7-8 years.
He was at Auburn for what, one season between Florida and South Carolina. It just seems like, you know, how many offensive coordinators has he been through? How much have they said about, you know, trying to get the right quarterback and trying to, you know, open things up and play more spread and stuff like that? But they never seem to be able to put it together. And I'm always curious what factors are going into play there with these, because it always seems to be that it's like there are coaches who come from the offensive side of the ball who a lot of times are willing just to sort of turn things over to the defensive coordinator and let them kind of work their magic. Rice being a perfect example here of having an offensive head coach who has, you know, to the extent that they've had success in two seasons under him, it's really been based on the defense. But it seems like a lot of these defensive coaches just can't quite get out of their own way in terms of their team's offenses.
Yeah, that I think that's very fair. I mean, if you know, you go back, I guess, my lifetime, and you actually, you know, funny thing, probably what, 1990 to 2016, 2015, the 2015 season was the season ended. All but one, we, you know, all but one year was coached by a former Oklahoma State offensive coordinator. Jeff Bauer came, you know, he was here, but then he was offensive coordinator at Oklahoma State before coming the head coach here, Larry Fedora, and then Todd Monken. So, and particularly, and Jeff Bauer, you know, he was the offensive coordinator here at one time, but let's face it, you have Brett Favre as your quarterback. You're going to look like an amazing offensive coordinator. But as time went by, Jeff Bauer really kind of embraced defense. And we had our defense in the late 90s. They kind of called it organized chaos because it was a very you would have guys moving all around up front. You'd have guys coming from pretty much all directions to try to just cause confusion. And it really was, it, you know, before the spread offense really became what it was, it really was revolutionary in how college football was played. But then you fast forward to when Larry Fedora took over, and you have Larry Fedora and you have Todd Monken, guys who could just light up the offensive scoreboard. It took both of them until their final year here before they actually were able to put together a solid defense, you know? But you know, offense is what sells tickets. You know, defense is it's fun, but it's not as fun. It's not as entertaining as having an offense that lights up the scoreboard.
Yeah. You know, if you're a G5 program trying to sell tickets, you know, if you can only have one, like your games are probably going to be more entertaining if you only have the offense. So,
right. And you guys remember, I mean, when it was, you know, a few years back when you guys first joined the conference, from that period of time until, you know, the Houston left, I mean, there was a lot of fun offenses in Conference USA during the late 2000s, or late to early
40 point shootouts.
Yes. Yes. So, I mean, Conference USA football was fun. I'm not saying it's not fun. It's not what it was now, obviously, but there was a period of time where those games were a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was. I mean, I was just complaining about this last week when we were talking to Adrian Broaddus, who covers UTEP for ESPN 600 out there in El Paso, and you know, y'all are also a holdover of the old CUSA, that late 2000s, late aughts CUSA that had all these programs that you know, the Tulanes, the Memphises, the Tulsas, and Houstons, and SMUs. All these programs that are now in the AAC, and you know, Rice and Southern Miss kind of got left behind. But the heyday of that version of CUSA, I mean, it was just it was a lot of fun.
And we were one of the first members of Conference USA back in 96. Before that, it was a Liberty Bowl Alliance. So you look at the way it was even before then, it was, you know, you had Louisville, you had, of course, East Carolina that's moved on. You had Cincinnati, you had Memphis. So, I mean, it really was, it was fun in football, but it was a heck of a basketball conference. And then before that, you know, and I know you guys have kind of a similar history. Before that, we were independents in football, but we were in the Metro Conference in basketball. And there was a lot of, you know, politicking and stuff that kind of shut the Metro Conference down. And stopped it from forming football. I won't get into all that. But back in the day, you had in the Metro Conference, you had Louisville, you had Memphis, you had Cincinnati, you had Florida State, you had Virginia Tech, so South Carolina. So I'm growing up. Those are the teams we play, you know, played especially in basketball and baseball when I was growing up. So then, you know, you have that fall through. Then you start the Conference USA, and then you have people leave, and you know, the big thing is the TV markets, and yeah, it has been disappointing for a lot of longtime fans.
So tell me about the intense rivalry you have with Middle Tennessee. We hit on this last week. That's the uncomfortable family that is Conference USA.
I don't, you know, on our podcast this week, my co-host Jason and one of our really good friends, I guess I'll call him a correspondent. They were kind of talking about Middleton. They were just kind of slamming on Middleton. But I mean, really, I mean, gosh.
I mean, we could have picked anybody from the East, right? FIU.
You could. I'm like, I have a little, I mean, we played Western. I don't really have much. I don't really know what to say about. Yeah,
good or bad.
It's bad. I will say Southern Miss fans don't like Western Kentucky fans. We played them for the conference.
What fans do Southern Miss fans like? Can we get that on the record?
I won't say that there's anything we particularly dislike. I mean, like there's some that are more fun to mess with than others. Like if you like UAB fans and even more so Louisiana Tech fans are the most fun to antagonize. And I think there's more fun in antagonizing some of these fans. There's just like, I think there's a genuine dislike of Western Kentucky fans. And it goes back to when we played them for the conference championship in 2015. And there was a lot of dirty play and didn't really feel like it was the classiest setup up there. So some people kind of remember that. But I don't think there's really a dislike of any Conference USA fan bases. I think there's some that are more fun antagonizing than others. I love antagonizing Louisiana Tech. I mean, if we beat Louisiana Tech, which we did a lot recently, except last year in multiple sports. But before that, like the year before that, I think we beat them in everything. I think we split in basketball. Anyways, but what I would do is I found a picture of Karl Malone crying. And so I kind of made a PNG file where I could take his head and Photoshop it onto different things. So anytime we beat them, I would take the photo that they put out there, like they're okay, Southern Miss wins 35-34. I'd take that photo and I'd find like Skip Holtz or one of their players. And I would stick that crying Malone face over their face, and then I would post it. And I did that every time we beat them.
The CUSA crying Jordan.
It is exactly right. It's the CUSA crying Jordan. So I didn't get to. I had it ready, but I didn't get to use it this year, unfortunately.
This is good. We've been trying to stoke up the rivalry aspect of Conference USA. We get some smack going around. There you go.
And in regards to Rice, I think there's a
We can take it. We can take it.
Well, I think that there's a respect. I think Rice. You know, I think Rice is in football and basketball. Rice is always a sneaky team, but there is a legitimate rival. I think when you think of who is our biggest rival in baseball, it's Rice. I mean, it doesn't get any yeah. bigger than Southern Miss versus Rice. I mean, that's if you see Rice, you know that that's going to be it's going to be a battle. So I think there is a anytime we talk about everybody gets into conference realignment and stuff. When they talk baseball, it's like, well, we got to have Rice. I mean, that's as good as it gets.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely like, so I matriculated at Rice in 2009 and had been a fan for a couple of years before that since my sister started. And I do miss those days of feeling like we were invincible in conference play.
Yeah.
Which I mean, you win 20 straight regular season or tournament championships and you'll get to feeling like that. But in those days, it was definitely, if there was a conference series that made you nervous or a team that when you were going into the conference tournament as a Rice fan, like, who do we have to watch out for? It was always Southern Miss. So, like, that's to the extent that there is a real, aside from, the Silver Glove series and when we get to play Texas and stuff like that, when there's like a real tension in conference play. Like that is one thing I do enjoy about Rice's current conference affiliation is that not even rivalry even, but just like that intensity of playing Southern Miss in baseball.
Go ahead.
Well, I'll just add on the baseball front, even, of course there was the decades really of Rice and Southern Miss, like being great baseball rivals and even our most recent conference baseball tournament that happened and wasn't canceled, those games, because Rice really had to win, not win out, but win a lot in the last couple weekends leading up to Biloxi to make it into the tournament. I think they ended up being like a 7 seed or something like that. 6, maybe. I don't know where they finished. But anyhow, Southern Miss had clinched a spot much earlier on. And those games in the conference tournament versus Southern Miss, and of course, the no-hitter to end the season was disgustingly brutal. But man, it was intense. Like, just those games, like, even with Rice, like, in a rebuilding mode of sorts, they were battles.
You knew you could never count Rice out. I mean, you when you saw they were playing, you're like, oh, you got to bring your A game. I mean, regardless of what their record is, I mean, that's, we've talked about it on the show. I mean, you know, most any other team you kind of expect to win, but when it's Rice, you know, okay, we better bring it. But it doesn't matter what Rice could have, you know. They could be 0-31 right now, and still they come out there and shock you. I mean, that's the kind of respect that we have for Rice baseball, and I mean, gosh, deservedly so.
This is good. You're gonna be our pimp up speech again for any time we do a baseball any podcast preview of any game. With the great Southern Miss
I need
association.
I need all the run I can get, so I'll take it. Whatever.
There we go. We'll clip you to the promo.
Yeah.
Well, if we do bounce back a little bit to football, you mentioned new OC, and just by the way, I was working the Google machine while we were talking. The if you need a new head coach at any point, or offensive coordinator, the current offensive coordinator at Oklahoma State is Casey Dunn. And he was actually a Southern Miss wide receivers coach back in 2010. Yes. So there's a link.
Great guy, too.
But
great
guy. The current guy, you might have to, is it Matt Kubik?
Yeah, Matt Kubik.
Matt
yeah.
Kubik. Is he going to sprinkle fairy dust on the offense and make it better? What makes you so, I'm not going to say confident, but optimistic that the change, you know, like the Joe Brady situation at LSU, the fingers are going to snap and all of a sudden the Southern Miss office will rise.
And I really can't say that that's going to happen. I feel, you know, I was a little optimistic coming into last season, but I really did not expect for the running game to be as subpar as it was. And this year you have
Frank Gore Jr.
You got Frank Gore Jr. coming in. You've got, first, it starts up front, and you've got 4 starters returning, and somehow, and you know this probably with guys that come in from JUCO and play up front, it's rare that you get a junior college lineman to come in right away. I mean, sometimes they'll come in right away, but most of the time, it usually by their second year is when it clicks. And I believe we had 4 JUCO linemen last year. I believe one of them redshirted because of an injury. We have another JUCO guy that's coming in. I know I just said that. It usually takes them 2 years,
but the hype goes the first year. We get really excited about JUCO guys.
Really excited
year one.
The first yeah. year. There's a newcomer. There's a guy that was Tykeem Doss. He was in NJC AA All American. You know, he's a guy that should figure into the mix right away. We had a couple of guys get banged up. So I feel really good about up front, and particularly when it comes to strength and conditioning as well. You had a lot of young guys the past 2 years that at least got in the mix. And we actually have depth. I mean, we've got 3 deep, and gosh, 2 or 3 years ago, there was a time where towards the end of the season, we couldn't really practice because we only had 4 healthy offensive linemen. So being 3 deep, you know, feel good about that. Have a lot of experience coming back, and then I mentioned our number one running back, Travinsky Mosley, went down to start the season last year, missed the entire year. You've got him. You've got a banger named Kevin Perkins, another big guy named Steve Anderson, 6'2", 255 pounds. You got a JUCO guy, one of the top JUCO guys in Mississippi, Don Ragsdale. Frank Gore Jr. I'm really curious to see how that plays out. You know, having him on campus seems to be very, very mature for his age. So I think the running game is going to be, I think it's going to be improved. And if it improves somewhat substantially, I think it, you know, could be a huge year. Of course, we lost Quez Watkins at wide receiver, but you've got Jaylon Adams, another speedster that you know, before his injury halfway through the season. I mean, him and Quez on the field at the same time, there weren't too many defenses that could slow them down.
And that was arguably the best duo of wide receivers in the conference.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
When they were both healthy.
Quez
was suspended early, and then he got back and still had like 1,000 yards on like 9 games or something like that.
Yeah, Quez is special. And but we got a couple of we got three JUCO guys. It's been easier for us with JUCO guys making that first year transition than it has up front on the offensive line. But we got a couple of guys, Jason Brownlee, first team in JCAA All-American, 6'3", 190 pounds. We got a guy that's going to play out of the slot named Daquan Bailey Brown, just a speedster. Guy works his tail off. I feel really good about the new additions up there. And then we have a tight end transfer from Arkansas, a kid named Grayson Gunner, 6'6", 243, redshirt senior. You know, he's a guy that figures to be in the mix at tight end as well. We've used some blocking tight ends the past couple of years. There was a year we had a really good receiving tight end that was a little banged up. But this is the first time I think we have a pretty solid athlete at tight end that can catch the ball. So I feel really good about what we've got coming back. I think when Jack Abraham has time to throw at quarterback, I think he is – there's not anybody that's any more accurate than him. When he doesn't have time to throw, that's when he starts to run into trouble. I mean, he's a smaller kid. He kind of – I'm not going to compare him to Drew Brees as in, you know, he's as good as Drew Brees, but being, you know, a smaller quarterback – being a very accurate quarterback, a very heady quarterback, you know, things are really looking up for Jack with the weapons he's going to have around him. So I feel better about offense. I feel like, I think you mentioned this a little while ago, you know, I hope there's not a handicap from how a head coach kind of, a defensive head coach puts his hands into the offense.
Just
I hope there's,
touch it.
Just let these guys ride. I feel good about it. It's hard to feel too good after the way that the season's ended the past couple of years, but I definitely feel better about this season than I have in the past.
And it's interesting because you mentioned Jack Abraham, and I look back at the Rice game and I, you know, from this past year, actually, if you juxtapose the Rice game from last year and the Rice game from 2 years ago, I feel like I saw a different guy. Like, and it wasn't just a year to year thing. I feel like, you know, that maybe there were some quarterbacks in Conference USA that were more, you know, toe the rubber middle of the line, but Abraham just always strikes me as a guy, man, when he's on, like you said, that accuracy and just dropping the ball to those playmaking wide receivers, like nothing could stop him. But when he has off days, man, it goes south fast. I mean, it led the conference in picks, and but also like one of the two or three most accurate guys. Is that right? Like,
yeah. But I think that,
and you don't get those together very often.
You don't. I think the big thing with him is, I mean, he was pretty much had to do everything because there was very little of a running game. I think having a more balanced attack will pay dividends for him and what he's able to do. I mean, when it got to where the defensive line could just pin their ears back and come after the quarterback, and they knew we weren't going to be able to run the ball on them, I mean, there was nothing he could do. So, and you mentioned that, I'm not going off the tracks here, but just kind of a funny story. I was sweating bullets during that game last year. I had a gig at a casino down on the coast. It was a very, very nice paying gig. And my co-host, Jason Bailey, somehow through our sponsor, we got a trip to go to the Rice game. So Jason and another one of our really good friends made the trip, documented the whole thing. We made a whole episode. Like, they would just record on the voice note recorder on their phone. We made a whole episode about the Rice trip. But I don't go to the casinos very often, so I'm like, I'm going to place a bet. And I placed the bet. And it was not looking good until right there at the end. Like, I was getting ready to throw my ticket in the trash, and then just the fluke touchdown. I believe it was Kevin Perkins, maybe. That fluke touchdown at the end won me some money, and really set the tone for a very nice parlay that evening. So, But I was
nothing like a garbage time cover.
What's the linebacker's name? Blaze Aldridge.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
yeah. I mean he was all over. I mean you couldn't contain it, stop him in that game.
And this was the game. This is the game where I think the video went viral on Twitter, Conference USA viral on Twitter afterwards of the Southern Miss offensive lineman in the pile, like untying his shoes and trying to tie them together. Y'all see that?
Yes, that was. Yes,
I'm pretty sure it was this game. Yeah,
that was Trace Clopton. That is. That is prototypical Trace. That's just I can't defend his actions. That's just what he does. But yeah, I did see that. That was I feel like there was something else on that from that game that was I can't remember, but I do remember the shoe tying incident.
Yeah, that was. I mean, that's the greatest compliment, right? If I can't stop you, like I'm gonna
yeah,
resort
gonna tie your shoes. Tie your shoes together. But I believe Aldridge he's back this year, right?
Oh, yes, yeah. He is.
Okay. Well, unfortunately for us, he's back this year. So he was an animal in that game. Really impressed with him. And you know, I know the Rice team was young, but you kind of knew they could be dangerous. And I mean, they really gave us fits that game.
Yeah, it was pretty much a defensive struggle. I think it was 10-0 at halftime. And nobody was really getting anything going up until the I think it was the last drive of Southern Miss before the half. But even then, after halftime, like it was just kind of like I feel like 20 points could win the game.
It was
19 Rice Owls in a defensive struggle. Who could have guessed?
And I think the line,
not many of those.
I think the line. I may be wrong about this, but I think the line was like 13, and we ended up winning 20-6. So it was like, it just enough.
I have to go check the numbers, but I feel like Rice, especially the second half of last season, well, I guess they won three games, but toward the middle end of last season, they were pretty good against the number. Like betting against Rice.
Yeah.
Like maybe they weren't good enough to, I mean, they weren't, I guess, obviously good enough to win those games because they lost 9 in a row, but they were better than people gave them credit for.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was one of those where we were talking like, you know, this is, I think, you know, Rice could be a team to contend with.
Bum, bum, bum.
I'm not sucking up to you guys because I really don't care, but I felt like
this is true. Spoken like a true Southern Miss fan.
I felt like the team was young and you could kind of see something there to build on. Maybe I'm wrong. You guys tell me.
Yeah, I mean, that defense was the strength of the team last year. And, Matt, how many of the starters are, well, out of the two deep? It's like we lost Miles Adams off the defensive line.
22.
Yeah. So 20 of 22 on the defensive two deep back. And then what should be, honestly, the thing is, if they get any consistency at quarterback at all, they should be very much in contention for a bowl, and you know it's CUSA, so maybe that means contention for CUSA West. But
it's wide open.
Yeah,
same song, so, different verse.
I didn't know this, but Lance Armstrong's son plays there. I had no idea.
He is. Yeah, he was a freshman offensive lineman last year, I think, or a redshirt freshman.
What year was he?
He might have been a redshirt freshman. I want to say he came in Bloomgren's first year.
He would have been a redshirt freshman last year, but he moved to fullback.
Ah. So
that's why you didn't really see him on the field, because you only play. I mean, even at Rice, we only play one fullback. I think maybe that'll change. Maybe
one at a time. We did play two last year after the first one was lost for the season on injury. But
right. But I think it's interesting. We drew some comparisons woefully to UTEP last week, but it's interesting hearing you talk about the defensive oriented nature of Southern Miss. And you know, with Rice having an offensive coach, it's a little bit different. But so far, at least when we kind of go and look at projective what this season could be, it really is bizarre feeling like, and I feel like Southern Miss has been like this for a while now, saying like without a question, like half of the football is going to be really, really, really good to elite. And I don't know what is going to be on the other side of the ball.
Yeah. Like, yeah. It's,
and I feel like so many teams in the conference, they're like, we'll be pretty good on offense and we'll be pretty good on defense, like middle of the pack, slightly good here, slightly bad here. But like, I feel like these are two pretty like,
and there's
cemented teams. Yeah, go ahead.
And with the spring, with having no spring football, you really, I mean, that makes it even more of a question mark. You're sitting here going, well, we should be, but you didn't get to see any of spring ball. So it's really hard to gauge exactly where you're at.
So did Southern Miss, did they have any practice? I'm trying to remember.
I know they had workouts. I don't know how far they got into it by the time things went south. I mean, I think our spring game was set for late April, so obviously it didn't happen. I think we got some workouts in. I just don't know. I don't think we got very far into them, though.
Yeah. It's been interesting as I've been working through and talking with folks and putting together this preview for Conference USA. It's a lot interesting doing it this year because everything comes with a caveat of like, you know, normally I would have known this after spring, but no, we're going to figure out the after spring in August.
I was trying to put together a depth chart just to have on me talking to you guys. And I was just like, well, this is going to be interesting. I got a couple of players from each spot, but gosh, it's really hard to gauge, you know, how it's going to play. Fall camp is definitely going to be fun if it happens.
Yeah, it's weird to be in the same place information wise, you know, when you're trying to think forward to the season, which is one of my favorite things to do. And I mean, I'm the sort of person who is trying to mentally make like a 2022 starting lineup for my teams, just off the top of my head. I literally tweet out. So I'm originally from Birmingham. I'm also an Alabama fan, grew up a big Bama fan. And I tweeted out a potential Alabama starting lineup for 2022 the other day, just because that is how my brain works. And I was like, okay, if we sign this freshman, like he'd be a sophomore by then, and what does that look like? And I don't know. My brain works in weird ways is the point here, I guess. But
I need to send you a video. So when I was at Southern Miss, like 99 to 02, I was the mascot. And one of my we competed at nationals every year. We were on the first Capital One All-America team, and two of my best friends were, you know, the mascots at Alabama and Tennessee. So we worked a Universal Cheerleaders camp together, and the Alabama mascot was my roommate. And we were talking one night after going out one night. We were back in the dorm. We were like, man, we got to do something big for the game this year. Well, what could we do? So we kind of had it in our head that we were going to do this WWE style fight. And we met like 4 hours before the game, and we kind of like, you know, worked it out what we were going to do. And basically I was going to kind of have the edge on my side of the field. He was going to have the edge on his side of the field. And then we were going to kind of battle to the middle and, you know, not really have a winner. We just respected each other and, you know, just wanted to have fun with it. So we get into this fight, and like, he tosses me through Alabama's kicker's net. I hit him over the head with like a cheerleader megaphone. And long story short, I think we did about $600 worth of damage. He had to go. He had to go apologize to Coach Franchione at the time. Like, Southern Miss could care less. I got no trouble whatsoever, but he got in all kind of trouble. And the SEC actually issued a mandate that week that mascots were no longer allowed to interact during the games. So we kind of have this fight, and it's in mascot circles in the Mid-South, it's somewhat talked about, but there's a YouTube video of this, and I'll have to send that over to you.
We're gonna we'll have to put that in the show notes. And that's big, you know, mascot circles in the South.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean Rice certainly has an illustrious history of you know, if you just want to go to recent incidents, I think it was sometime in like the mid-late 2000s, Sammy got ejected from a basketball game for, like, I can't remember if he, like, shoved a referee or something like that. There was an incident with a referee. But then also, if you've never read the origin story of how, and this goes for everyone listening, because this is a fantastic story. If you go read the origin story of how Sammy came to be, it involves some Aggies kidnapping Rice's mascot from a basketball game, and then Rice staging a daring escape from College Station in the middle of the night, and cadets occupying a small town.
Oh, wow.
It's really spectacular. The sort of thing that like early 1918 or so, like early 20th century college sports, when there were no rules about anything, only the sort of story that kind of environment could have produced. It is absolutely wild.
I didn't have too much, I got ejected from Nebraska. I got ejected from, like, I wanted to be the bad guy. Like, I wanted to be like, when we were playing, like, you know, away, I always liked to just, I did a lot of like the Scott Hall move where you kind of just taunt them and then like the throat slashes. I did a lot of that. And so we're playing Nebraska, and this was 99. This was actually my first away game. And we were beating them. Like, this was when they had Eric Crouch at quarterback. And, you know, you're sitting here, you're losing to, I think we were up like, I don't know, 13 to 10 or something like that. I can't remember. But we were up in the third quarter. And there's this ball boy for them that just had been giving me hell all day. Now, I realize that I'm going to implicate myself here by admitting this, but I believe that the statute of limitations is passed. But
they're going to issue a warrant for you in Lincoln.
Well, the ball boy, I just, I don't know what possessed me to do this, but he had on athletic shorts. So I just went up and I just yanked his shorts down. And he had on like whitey tighties with half a wedgie, and I got escorted off the field by Nebraska campus police. The arresting officer was named Barb McGill. She was a delight. And when I was done, their cheerleader coach came and said, "Hey, you better get out of here." So I went and got on the bus and left out. And I get on the plane to fly back, and I was terrified. I was like, "Oh man, my first game." And I knew the president of the university at the time, and I get on there, and he says, "Well," he said, "Jamie, I saw you getting escorted off the field. What happened?" So I was like, "Well, shoot," I told him, and he said, "Well, if you don't get in trouble, sometimes you really aren't trying," and then just laughed, and that was it. And but I have a file with Nebraska campus police. I mean, it was it's a great way to start my career.
It's legendary.
It was fun. It was fun.
This is good. Now I'm just going back through that. See, that was the era, and Carter, you brought up A&M. That was the time when A&M was literally going through and stealing everybody's mascot, just because why not? And I believe the only animal they didn't successfully steal, that was the SWC back in the day, was the TCU horned frog. They got everybody else because they couldn't find the frog.
Yeah, I wouldn't really want to mess with that frog, really. I mean,
those things shoot blood out of their eyes. Right. Oh, thank you.
Yeah, wait, no, what? I'm good.
Yeah, the actual and it's weird because it's like the name of the animal is the horny toad. Like, that's what it, which is weird because it's a lizard, first of all. But like, if you've ever seen some of TCU's helmets, have on either side of the central, like, black, if they were in like the purple helmets with like the black stripe down the middle, some of them have like two red lines that trace along that stripe. And that is the actual horned toad. The animal for which their mascot is named sometimes defends itself from predators by shooting blood out of its tear ducts.
Yeah, this is good.
I'm good.
We needed the educational aspect of the pod.
This is the kind of stuff that this kind of stuff will take you far on Jeopardy.
Yeah, I should try auditioning for that.
You should try that.
Oh man, you know, we said we were going to find a rabbit trail and chase it. I think we've.
I'd say we found several.
This is good. Well, I don't even feel like we need to get back to football, but we do have the highly contested, and we haven't started scoring these yet. Maybe we need to score them, but we have the lightning round as our last outstanding item. If you are prepared.
I don't know if I'm prepared, but I'm game.
All right, this is true. I mean, as long as you don't end up arrested by our fictitious campus police and everyone's underwear stays affixed to their bodies.
Yeah, I've learned my lesson. Good. I think we're good, yeah.
All right, well, so here we go. We got a handful of questions. Only rule is no taking time to think. First thing on the top of your head. And, okay. You know, we'll compare notes and we'll tell you what you got right or wrong and remind you at the end of the season. So, all right. Without further ado, first question is, will the 2020 football season start on time?
No.
Okay. Are we going to have fans in the stands at any point?
No.
All right. Football. Who leads the team in touchdowns for Southern Miss this year?
Nobody.
Yeah, you're going to have to expound on that.
I don't think we're going to play. I don't think it's going to be a season this year.
Oh.
But that's why I had the answers that I have. But if we do get to play, then I will take the I think there will be fans, a limited amount of fans in the stands. Who leads Southern Miss in touchdowns this year? I think Travinsky Mosley.
This is good. That was a very intellectual, ricey answer. I'm impressed.
You guys are running right off on me.
Mosley. Yeah, we'll get there. All right. So if there's a season caveat, who's going to lead the team in sacks?
Jacques Turner.
Easy pick. All CUSA guy. And then if Southern Miss doesn't win the West this year, taking y'all out of it, who does?
Ooh. I don't have time to think. I'm just going to say UAB.
Okay, the correct answer there was Rice, but we'll give you points for trying. If Southern Miss doesn't win Conference USA, try that again. If Southern Miss doesn't win CUSA as a whole conference, who does? Is it UAB or somebody from the East?
Oh, I hate the God. Damn it. I guess UAB because I don't really know. I don't think FAU is going to be as good. I guess UAB. Ugh.
All right, and then a bit of a different tract here. Are Rice and Southern Miss in the same conference in 2025? That's 5 years from now.
Yes.
Are you happy about that? Are you sad? Are you both?
I like I said, if it's one of those things where, I mean, we've had some great games. I think, but for baseball, I think it's crucial. And I think we're close enough. I think we're close enough in proximity. I mean, when you look at all the teams out there on the board that could be involved in some kind of realignment, it spans far and wide. So I think that we're close enough that I think we'll still likely be in the same conference.
Makes a lot of sense. I'd much rather travel and have done that trip to Hattiesburg than Virginia or.
No kidding.
Wherever. I mean, shoot, it's a. What is that, like a 6-hour drive to Hattiesburg versus a 12-hour drive to El Paso?
Yeah, oh, man. Dude, I made that drive. I mean, not for football, but I made that drive through El Paso one time. Holy hell. That is quite the haul.
It's farther from Houston than Birmingham is.
God, there's a lot of Dairy Queens out there. Once you get past like a certain point, it's like the Dairy Queen is the mile marker.
Yeah, that is extremely West Texas.
It's true. Like, all right, last piece. Over under 1.5 more football seasons for Jay Hobson at Southern Miss.
Oh,
1.5. So seasons played.
I'm gonna say over.
With lots of confidence.
I mean, I'm like just the pick off. Like, I think that. I don't, if you ask me to pick, like, I think he's going to have a good season to still be here next season, but I think that that's possible. I don't think he has to, you know, be a world beater to hang on to it. It's just got to show progress and just got to be, there's going to have to be something there for him to stick around. And I feel like he can, there's enough there that he can do that. I don't know what that ceiling is for this 2020 Southern Miss team, but I will say over a year and a half, over 1.5 seasons.
Yeah, I feel like he's Fedora.
he's one of those coaches, and we have a fair number of those in CUSA right now, that probably the 90th percentile outcome for this season, at least, is definitely not bad enough to get fired, but definitely not good enough that someone else is going to hire him away. So
there's always a lot of turnover in the South, so it wouldn't shock me if, you know, at some point something good came along, but it just hasn't been there thus far. And I mean, our out of conference schedule is pretty fair. The real obstacle, well, we got Liberty at Liberty, which is kind of a sneaky game, but I mean, we play at Auburn. I mean, other than that, we've got Jackson State and South Alabama at home. Both of them, I feel pretty confident that we should, you know, breeze through. So, I mean, if he has a good season, he could have a really great season given the schedule that's on the board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now you got me thinking. It's interesting because you have guys like, I mean, Frank Wilson, if we're talking Southern Miss ties, he was there for a season and he parlayed a good couple years at LSU into a head coaching gig at UTSA. I'm trying to think now, especially if Hobson could probably fill the top-notch defensive coordinator lifer role somewhere.
Yeah, but I think he legitimately wants to be a head coach, but if it came to that, I don't think he would have any problem landing something like that. I mean, he's worked with a lot of coaches. I mean, he's really close with Coach O. You know, it wouldn't shock me if things didn't work out here, if he ended up there in some capacity. He graduated from Ole Miss. I mean, he's got a lot of ties to throughout the region. So I that could be a possibility if for some reason head coaching doesn't work out. But I think he's going to try to make it work.
All right. Well, so far, other than not picking Rice to win the West, you get passing scores on all of your answers. And if nothing else, so first off, if there is no football season and we're looking at, you know, a however many month off season, and we're going to have to come back on and prep you with your best mascot set.
I could do a whole episode on mascot stories. I've got stories from just, I've done a lot, man. I was a boxing judge at one point. I've been doing stand up for 10 years now. I judged a Tonya Harding fight, one time. And then we went out and partied that night, which was insane. I got all kind of good, great stories. So yeah, anytime.
Yeah. If there's no season, we're definitely, you know, we've got a couple in the holster now, I guess, but we're definitely going to have to build up a repertoire of people who can
fill time,
provide us with the filler content. So you'll be, I think your performance,
high class filler content.
I think your performance tonight has vaulted you near the top of the priority list there. So,
there's another buddy. I'll give you, I mean, you guys probably know somebody that's a little more connected at Louisiana Tech. But I have a good buddy of mine that is he's a comedian. He moved out to LA. He's a tech guy, but he just moved back and he just started a podcast with one of the main beat writers down there, talking New Orleans sports, but a guy named Andrew Polk, and he's got some pretty insane stories too. So I may have him on mine this year. We'll see.
All right. Well, before we let you go, where can we find you and follow your podcast and anything Southern Miss related? Where do we go?
For the podcast, it's at To The Top Talk on, you know, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook as well. I have a website, jamiearrington.net. There's a link to the podcast on that site, all the different platforms you can check it out. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Jamie_Arrington. And, you can catch me at, I don't know, Target. You may have seen me at TGI Fridays.
Hard to recognize with the mask.
Yeah, it's hard to recognize with the mask. Yeah, absolutely. I'll give you guys a story before I let you go. So this is a great man. This is one of my, this is a hilarious mascot story to me. So when I left Southern Miss, I went to the Chicago Bears. I was the first mascot for the Bears back in 2003. Now, with that comes, there's a learning curve because they'd never had one before. And this is my first time, you know, my first real job out of college. And so the first game was the first home game in the regular season, the first game in the brand new Soldier Field, the Bears were taking on the Green Bay Packers. It was a Monday night football game. This is where I was going to make my big debut. And so what I had planned out was my assistant. So I was going to run out on the field. My assistant was going to come out in Packer garb. He was going to have a cheese head on. I was going to rip the cheese head in half. I was going to throw it in the stand, you know, hit him with like a stunner or something, throw it in the stands. Well, the problem was we did not tell security. So I'm running out of the tunnel and I turn around and my assistant has like a Green Bay Packers sweater on and I see him just being swarmed by security. And then all of a sudden he catches like an elbow to the neck and they take him down. They start dragging him off the field. And so I'm running behind him. I'm standing character. I'm like taunting him like, yeah, get him, get him. And we get off the field and I was like, this is my guy, you know, that we didn't know, you know. So anyways, nobody told the media. So the front page of the Chicago Sun-Times the next day was like, first fan arrested new Soldier Field.
This is fantastic. Oh, man. I very much.
And you can, oh, and you can, oh, the video, I didn't end the plug, Seymour versus Big Al on YouTube. If you look up Seymour versus Big Al, or if you look up mascot fights, that's an easy way to come across it.
This is good. Well, and now, so that reminds me when the Texans launched, I'm trying to remember what year this was, but it was, I think it was their debut season or their second season. The Baltimore Ravens were in town for a game and they had Toro rappel from the roof.
Yeah.
And he came down and it was around Christmas. It was an early December game. So you have the Baltimore Raven mascot dressed up in like Grinch attire. And he just comes down and like, it's still like attached to the thing and they're unattaching him from his like harness or whatever. And then he just goes out and decks this Raven. And I was just like, oh, this got real quick.
Yeah. Yeah. That he was excellent too. That Toro was really good, at least back in the day. I'm sure he still is.
All right. So for our second edition mascot power rankings.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's do it. Let's do it. All the guys I know retired though. I know probably like three people still active. So it's tough to say.
You are the only person I now can say that has been a professional mascot.
Hey, yeah, absolutely. I'm trying to think if there's any. I can't think of anybody. I don't know anybody else in Conference USA that has. So I don't know.
All right. We'll go check with Sammy and make sure there's no hard feelings.
Oh yeah. Sammy's legit, man. He's not getting stolen again.
Well, all right. I think that'll do it for us this week. Thanks again to Jamie for coming on. Thanks to those of you who stuck it out through the episode with us. And hi to those of you from the Southern Miss fans who have stuck it out. If this was your introduction to the pod, but hopefully y'all had as much fun as we did. And we'll see you later. And Rice Fight.
This show was edited and produced by Carter Spires. It features music from Joseph McDade.